Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm your co-host, Ari Edwards. Mr. Allen will not be with us tonight. He is on a special assignment. As we take a look at preparation for war. By the way, it's been a miserable day up here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. But, you know, irrespective of our age, we consider ourselves to be quite lucky. We could be on an American aircraft carrier somewhere in the Sea of Japan, not knowing when we will see a bright light, if you will, across our bow, and we'll never remember anymore. Preparation for war. The man who said that we were not the world's policeman, if you will, President, the imperial president, Donald Trump, is now calling himself the war president, the imperial, if you will, a man of war, Uncle Sam pointing the finger, we need you, if you will. So tonight we will take a look at preparation in two separate fronts, 6,600 miles apart. Last time the United States of America fought a two-front conflict, it was in 1945, as the Second World War came to an end. The Germans surrendered. The Japanese were nucleared into submission, if you will. In fact, Japan, if you want to call it an honor, has historically the only recorded nuclear attack upon its nation and upon its people. In fact, many Japanese now who are in their 70s are slowly dying from the radiation and from the effects of the nuclear bombings of two of Japan's key cities back in 1945. It was, in fact, in April 1945 that the United States sent a message that we are a supreme power, if you will, and nuked. It took Russia a couple of years to catch up, but the Russian timing in the minds of many in the communist world was very timely. That perfection, if you will, of creating a nuclear weapon allowed the Russians to come to the aid of the Chinese, if you will, and the North Koreans in the conflict called the Korean Peninsula, if you will. Many of you in this listening audience were too young, are not even born, when an American Supreme General, who actually was the proxy emperor of Japan, named Douglas MacArthur, Supreme Allied Commander in the Far East, if you will, had grown weary of the conflict and continued setbacks by the little yellow men of China and North Korea, if you will. I remember the kind of jokes that I remembered hearing as a young 11, 12, and 13-year-old here in the United States. And MacArthur became frustrated. He became angry. And so he let then-President Harry Truman know that he was going to nuke the little yellow Chinese. If he could bring the Japs, quote-unquote, to their knees, he would also bring the North Koreans and the Chinese to their knees with a couple of three or four, five well-placed nuclear bombs. Only thing is, Harry Truman had a little bit more foresight, a little better understanding of the national scene, and also America's representatives at a new organization called the United Nations had received word from Russia's representatives that not only had the Russians perfected nuclear weapons, but they were prepared to use them in defense of their neighbors, if you will. China and Russia, of course, share a common border, as well as the Russians share and the Chinese share a common border with a little country called North Korea. Dwight Eisenhower, Douglas MacArthur, Dwight Eisenhower was to become the next president after Harry Truman completed his second term. Douglas MacArthur maintained the hell with the chief executive of the United States of America, and he was going to go ahead and do what he wanted to do. President Truman, a pretty good politician, if you will, out of Kansas City, Missouri, Jackson County, if you will, told MacArthur, let's meet at an island in the Pacific. You can kind of tell me what it is that you're thinking, what your argument is, and et cetera. Once he got MacArthur there, he told MacArthur, you're fired, if you will. Douglas MacArthur was never a factor again in the American scheme of things, but President Harry S. Truman probably saved a lot of Americans from being cremated, if you know, and many Americans never to be born, if you understand the consequences and the effects of a nuclear conflict. Ever since then, though there were a couple of hiccups along the way, particularly surrounding the divided city of Berlin until the Berlin Wall collapsed and all those kinds of things, but it was the foresight and the political savvy of Harry Truman that this nation, as well as Russia, continued to exist and to thrive, if you will. Within a very short period, the Chinese had gained the nuclear capabilities. France and Great Britain gained nuclear capabilities. Israel was given nuclear capabilities in order to keep the Arabs in the Middle East in line, if you will, which they have done now for over 40 years. And later, India and Pakistan, who were sworn enemies, both were able to complete the rush towards making them nuclear partners, if you will. And then a number of years later, a little country by the name of North Korea began to show that they had nuclear capabilities, if you will. And so tonight in the Pacific, if you will, particularly in an area known as the Sea of Japan, the China Sea, if you will, and et cetera, an American military strike force led by the aircraft carrier, the Vinson, the USS Vinson, are now positioning on the southern tip of the Japanese islands, if you will. Of course, for matters of national security, the State Department and specifically the Defense Department are not indicating the direct location. You have to imagine that the American flotilla, comprised of a aircraft carrier, the Vinson, as we said, a heavy missile cruiser, and two missile destroyers, as well as at least two supply ships, if you will, are now located somewhere in the vicinity of the furthest south of the Japanese islands. At some point in time, the American carrier strike force, as they say in military terms, passage between Japan and South Korea, you can rest assured the American flotilla will not go to the west in close proximity to China, who is prepared to put on alert her nuclear forces, if you will. In the last couple of hours, the North Koreans have indicated, and this is kind of dangerous. It is something that should make us very cautious in how we deal. But when you have instability in the West Wing and throughout the entire White House, you're not sure that stability is the order of the day. But clearly, the North Koreans have indicated they also reserve the right of a preemptive strike. Now, just a couple of days ago, many conservative commentators and et cetera here in the United States were applauding the actions of President Trump and his administration and the American military in hitting a obscure airfield in the southern part of Syria in close proximity to Damascus, the capital of Syria, allegedly taking out some assets, if you will. Didn't take out the runway, but they allegedly took out some bunkers, maybe a couple of aircraft. In fact, at one point, the Secretary of Defense kind of made a bad mistake. Of course, they've been making a lot of bad mistakes in the White House, and said that 20% of the Syrian Air Force had been destroyed. The next day, yesterday, he was Secretary of Defense, Mr. McMaster's, General McMaster's, indicated that he had erred and had somewhat misspoken, that he was talking about what is identified as serviceable Syrian aircraft that may have been down for repairs or et cetera. And so, you know, getting the story together. In the meanwhile, America's Secretary of State, the oil legend and guru, arrives in Moscow to meet with the extreme pair, if you will, the foreign minister of Russia, and of course, Vladimir Putin, a very, very dangerous man. Of course, all this came on the heels of the visit by China's number one, if you will, Peng, who sat and listened to Donald Trump, first of all, tell him how serious the United States was with regards to their position. And then, of course, let the Chinese leader see him, President Trump, from the southern White House, if you will. This president has so many White Houses, if you will, starting with the Trump Tower, Camp David, of course, the White House in Washington, D.C. We thought that his facility there in Mar-a-Lago was it. Now we find out that we have a summer White House somewhere in Virginia, if you will. This is a president that has very rich needs, if you know what I mean. Of course, though he's allegedly a billionaire, it is the American taxpayers who will be paying for all this, including all those golf rounds. Do you know that this is a president that has played more golf in 83 days than poor Barack Obama, who was just blasted, if you will, just cut to pieces by media in this country, both left and right, played in 8 years? In 82 days, our beloved imperial president, Donald Trump, has played more golf. And by the way, the fees at the country club there in Mar-a-Lago have just skyrocketed. Everybody wants to belong to the club, if you will. I don't know if Vladimir Putin plays golf, but I'm quite sure he did. He would be invited to play a couple rounds of golf there in southern Florida. I mean, that's just how ridiculous this situation has become. Now, while we await hopefully an easing of the tension in the Sea of Japan, if you will, and pray for the lives of America's sons and daughters, because God knows if there is a conflict, the 30,000-man American strike force that is deployed along the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone, will in fact find themselves being a part of history, no longer existing, if you will. It will be brutal. We have given preliminary numbers as it pertains to the first hours of any kind of conflict on the peninsula of Korea. We maintain 235,000 will die in the first hours. And by the end of the week, there will probably be upwards of 3 million individuals, primarily South Koreans, who certainly did not ask the United States to ask them if they were prepared to throw their country into conflict and war, if you will. And so we prepare for war here in the United States of America, though, you know, we're enjoying the Stanley Cup and the sporting events that are a part of our culture, if you will. Getting ready for the NBA basketball playoffs, as basically all the NBA teams are playing the last games of the season, and et cetera. So we await the historical determination as it pertains to what is going on at this very moment. As we said, the American Carrier Task Force, and we are not sure that this task force is armed with nuclear weapons. The Pentagon has stayed away from indicating that, if you will. But it is quite clear that something is happening. Something is going on. And clearly we need to explore and find out just what it is that is happening and what the carrier task force, led by the carrier Vinson, Carl Vinson, is expected to do if, in fact, they are ordered to initiate a preemptive strike against the North Koreans, and the North Koreans respond with tactical. Notice we use the term tactical nuclear weapons. All, you know, these countries have all kinds of weapons, if you will. The North Koreans said something interesting yesterday through their spokesperson at the foreign ministry, and that is that the United States needed to be on guard and understand that they were attempting to bully a nuclear country, a nuclear power, if you will, and that in the past, the United States has had a reputation since 1945 of basically beating up on nations that do not have nuclear capabilities, except when the then Soviet Union indicated to the United States that any effort to use nuclear weapons against the Chinese and the North Koreans in that conflict, 1950, 51, and 52, that it would not be allowed to take place, if you will. And so we watch very closely this conflict, if you will, how it will be handled, what will happen in the coming days, what kinds of negotiations will go on. The president has insisted that China has a responsibility to babysit the North Koreans, if you will, that they will some way or another pressure the North Koreans to stand down, to give up their nuclear capabilities, and et cetera. Maybe that would be good in a universe, you know, that is run by Doctor Who or a parallel universe or whatever, for the reality of what is happening in this between these countries and on this planet, if you will. I don't think that that will happen. And so we watch closely. We were saying just minutes ago that you talk in terms of Seoul, Korea, South Korea, the capital of South Korea, and an industrial, a very significant industrial center that has 15 million people residing in it and 20 million in the immediate surrounding area, if you will. That is why we articulate the casualty figure at over 2 million within a week's time, which will really test the moral compass of all of the nations of this world and planet of ours, if you will. We do not, and we take note of this, by the way, as a journalist and a historian, we find it interesting that everyone is staying away from casualties, if you will, for all of those of us that, watch all of the media, the Fourth Estate, and et cetera. That one of the, I think, most immoral jobs that is not done by commentators and et cetera is that no one has the intestinal fortitude to indicate what the casualties be. How many South Korean and North Korean citizens will perish? It will be a conflict that will surpass, just within a week and a week and a half time, the total number of individuals that died in Europe, as an example, during the Second World War. Now, that takes us to the meeting today in Moscow, in which it was quite clear, as you watched the press conference, that Secretary of State Tillerson looked tired. He looked tired. I mean, he's only been on the job, you know, 80 days, if you will, or thereabouts, and yet he looked tired. He looked like he was overmatched, if you know what I mean. Now, that is what is troubling as it pertains to what also is not being discussed in this country. You know, diplomatically, intellectually, morally, is this country in a situation where it is being overmatched? Are they being overmatched by the Chinese? Are they being overmatched by the Russians? Are they being overmatched by the North Koreans? Are they being overmatched by the president of Syria, Assad, who does not seem to be a man that is prepared to buckle down? All kinds of different narratives are being advanced about how, quote unquote, the Russians really want to dump Assad and et cetera. You know, when I see the amount of military hardware that is coming into Syria, if you will, from the Russians, including an aircraft carrier, the only one really the Russians have, but an aircraft carrier that is steaming towards the eastern Mediterranean, which will put this Russian carrier and its support task force within eyeball distance of American fighting ships and et cetera. We do not see, if you notice, we do not see a lot of America's NATO allies, other than maybe the Turks, volunteering to send destroyers and cruisers and aircraft, if you will, to that part of the world, just off the coast of Lebanon and Israel and Syria and Turkey, if you will, and in close proximity to Cyprus. If you notice, you don't see a lot of volunteering. And maybe a signal was sent a couple days ago when the G7, it used to be the G8, until they allegedly threw the Russians out. The G7, which was being asked to support a motion by the United States and Britain for additional sanctions against Russia because of the complicity of the Russians in allowing the chemical attack on the innocent people of Syria, including women and babies. And the five remaining representatives of the G7 said, we can't do it. So there has to be more dialogue. We don't want to push the Russians into a corner. This was the G8. These were good white Christian nations, if you will. Also, they were, you know, by and large, members of NATO, if you will. By the way, we have not seen NATO indicate in the last 48 hours that they are sending, their military, if you will. We've heard nothing from Spain, if you will. We've heard nothing from Greece, if you will. We've heard nothing from some of the newer NATO. We haven't heard anything from our good German friends, if you will, Belgium, the Netherlands. It kind of makes you wonder if folks are convinced that what the Imperial American President said, who was responsible for the chemical attack, that is factual information, and we don't find ourselves faced with another Iraq and quote unquote weapons of mass destruction. Flies, my friends, and I know that many of you in our international audience specifically recognize what we're saying here, that people are having a hard time believing that there is the degree and level of honesty and integrity that the United States can be believed. Now, if that is in play, it makes it very difficult for your nation, our nation, to lead and to be followed, if you will. These are things that we should be discussing, if you will, that folks should be talking about, there should be the kind of honest discussion, moral discussion, if you will, with regards to what is actually going on and how it is going on. It is not happening, and I'm just not sure that this current administration of Donald Trump's has the wherewithal, if you will. There's enough internal conflict going on in the White House now. Some folks saying that some who came in with the Donald, if you will, are not on the firmest ground as it pertains to their role and influence with the current president of the United States. That then makes you wonder if there is the kind of continuity of purpose, if you will, strength of purpose, and a moral fiber of purpose residing inside of the White House. It is quite clear that the Congress of the United States of America is very concerned that there is an absence, if you will, of a commit carrying out of the national will. In fact, the question is there a national will for the United States to engage in a conflict that could last as long, even half as long, as the current conflict going on in Iraq and Afghanistan? Americans, you know, have a great appreciation of the leisure life, if you will, certainly the quality of life, the ability to enjoy life, if you will. And consequently, there is much discussion in our beloved nation now that folks are very concerned that the quality of life is beginning to slip. Of course, the Trump administration will reassure everyone as we prepare for war here in the United States of America against the little brown and yellow people of the world. And by the way, that's the only people that we really fight, with the exception of Serbia. In the mid-1990s, this country has not taken on, nor in significant numbers, exterminated, killed, murdered, however you want to put it, anyone but people of color. Primarily now, those of the Muslim faith, if you will, who grow weary, but the continued reflection and discussion by young men of the Arab persuasion is allowing for a significant increase in recruitment, if you will, and in radicalization. And it makes it much more easier for those groups that are identified as terrorist groups, operating as terrorists, and et cetera, to recruit. And there is a lot of recruitment going on. Now, that takes us back to the most dangerous situation that we're looking at right now, that is North Korea. The second, of course, is what is happening in Syria, if you will. And just how serious are the Russians after the meetings between two top officials of the United States of America? Just how serious are the Russians about doing anything that will restabilize, not destabilize, but restabilize that part of the world? Now, in the situation in the Far East, you know, again, as we said just minutes ago, the President of the United States has insisted that China has all kinds of obligations. This is the same president that makes degrading remarks, racist remarks, if you will, dismisses the importance of other people, particularly if they are not Caucasian, if you will, not a part of the maddening crowd of the far right of the United States of America, dismisses them as insignificant, irrelevant. In fact, the president had great comfort today in calling President Assad an animal and et cetera. I mean, folks probably think that, but on the world stage of diplomacy, it has always been agreed that you, as the titular head of your nation, and particularly when you are seen as the leader of the free world, whatever effect that's supposed, that you act in a civil manner, if you will. You act in a manner in which there seems to be dignity and respect and et cetera. But that is not a provision, if you will, that is in existence in the White House of the Imperial President, as we have identified him. In fact, I still identify him as the Western Commissar, and the current White House as the as the Western Kremlin, if you will. Of course, the Eastern Kremlin is there with President Putin. Putin, in some photo ops, he and the Secretary of State and President Putin's foreign minister meeting, Putin displayed the mannerisms of a man feeling strength, feeling invigorated, if you will, feeling comfortable with regards to what it was that he was saying, how he was saying it, and who he was saying it to. And you must understand and remember that Vladimir Putin is a trained espionage, an intelligence agent, and et cetera, and a man who takes great pride in his Russian toughness, if you will. And in fact, he lectured for 2 hours to Secretary Tillerson, if you will, a man who just 4 years prior, President Putin had given him the Russian peace plaque, if you will, and had called him one of the great leaders of peace in our time and in the world. It kind of sounded like Neville Chamberlain as he gave away Europe and marched the world towards the Second World War. Neville and Chamberlain, Prime Minister of Great Britain at the particular time that he met with Adolf Hitler in Munich, 1937, gave away the family farm and in the process caused millions and millions and millions of lives to be lost, not only in Europe, but across the world. And so we watch closely tonight here from Fortress America as we move up to the 9 o'clock hour, if you will. As we said, wanted to spend the first 30 minutes of tonight's program because we are not honest as media, if you will. We are not honest about what it is that we really think, and we are lazy to some degree with regards to doing the necessary research so that we can provide information, observations, and reflections to those that take the time to listen and to look in and view and et cetera, those of the Fourth Estate. And in many respects, in my estimation, as both a journalist and a historian and et cetera, it weakens the moral fiber of a nation and of a people, if you will. And as one who lives in this nation and has watched how those of my people, the sons and daughters of the African, have been treated for, you know, 500 years, if you will, I feel comfortable in having a pretty good idea, pretty good feeling about just how bad things are with regards to respect for the points of view of the African Americans. We were lucky in some regards in closing that we did not see a more pronounced expression of disrespect for the sons and daughters of the African who have so loyally served this nation, fighting in defense, quote unquote, of the existence of this nation in attacks on Barack Obama, first and probably only African American to be president, and we probably won't have another African American president in this country for 30 years. If we're lucky, and if we're all still here, if we don't become a very bright star that explodes and then disappears forever for those that still exist in the great galaxy, in the great universe that this planet for this particular moment is in. We just assume that reasonable men, good people, if you will, people who care about the future of the race, the human race. We don't have to talk about, you know, color, national origin, and all that, because if it comes down to that, where that fatal mistake is made, we will all be spoken of in the past tense, if you will. I think people clearly understand that. But again, we repeat, we're a little redundant. We don't apologize. We watch closely. The American Naval Task Force, now situated just off the southern tip of Japan, if you will, prepared to possibly initiate a preemptive strike against an enemy who is themselves prepared to initiate a preemptive strike against American military personnel in southern Korea, if you will, and any place else in that part of the world. And then you have to make a decision if a conflict should explode, be initiated in that part of the world. Korea, countries like Japan will possibly disappear very quickly. You have to understand that North Koreans will fire nuclear missiles towards Japan, if you will, and certainly, as we said, there will be at least a minimum of 2 million dead in South Korea, if not more, within the first 6 to 7 days. And so that is a sad commentary for those of you that have your world atlas and a center in play on your computers. Just, you know, call up that particular area of the world, take a look at it, and begin to reflect yourself. You know, you have, interesting enough, three nuclear powers sitting there together: China, North Korea, Russia, and you have an American ship, well, an American naval task force that probably has nuclear capabilities. The Russians using their satellites, the Chinese using their satellites, North Koreans using a couple of satellites they have, are able to detect it. There are signatures, if you will, that show the presence of nuclear weapons, and those bodies, quote-unquote, that are contained within the nuclear warheads and et cetera. And all sides can determine the presence of how many nuclear weapons, how many warheads, and et cetera, and basically go from there. And let us hope tonight, my friend, and in the coming days, that a Titanic, and that is probably the appropriate word in that many are so still fascinated by the sinking of the Titanic, the great passenger ship many, many, many decades ago. Let us hope that, quote-unquote, clearer heads, if you will, clearer minds, will indicate that this is not the time to play games, to attempt to flex muscles, if you will. And for those that are historians of conflicts and et cetera, as we are, one needs to look back at the Korean conflict of the late 1940s and in the early 50s and understand that both the Chinese and the North Koreans are a tough people, if you will. They are warriors. They are fighters. And irrespective of how the history books may be crafted and et cetera, the still existence of an armistice, number one, and the DMZ, number two, indicates that the United States of America and that both sides did not prevail in what was a terrible conflict in which no one is quite totally sure what the real purpose was, if you will. And so you must keep that in mind for those that have sons and daughters who are already serving this land and the armed forces of this nation, if you will, that one should offer a prayer for the well-being of their sons and daughters who are serving in the United States military, wherever they may be, on what aircraft carrier or destroyer or heavy cruiser or submarines and et cetera, if you will, or in the air, in those B-52s and B-2 and stealth bombers that are in the air 24 hours a day, if you will, or those who are at the missile sites as we speak, really not wanting to hear the order to put into play continental ballistic missiles, ICBMs. One must think along these lines. You see, we are not honest with ourselves with regards to what is on the horizon, what is happening, and how things are being handled. Right now in the United States, we are, well, not this commentator, and millions and millions and millions of people that I'm aware of, if you will. We are not, quote-unquote, enthralled, if you will, mesmerized, if you will, with the results of the election of 2016. One understands that there are all kinds of problems. Let us say this in conclusion on this particular issue. We find it very interesting that every time information comes out, such as in the case of Mr. Page, as an example, if you will, and others who were a part of the Trump campaign and et cetera, every time there is the uncovering of additional information and et cetera, there is some kind of diversion that takes place, if you will. Just 6 days ago, the African-American woman named Susan Rice, security advisor, if you will, to the President of the United States, Barack Obama, was being called a Typhoid Mary. It was being called, well, she was being called probably more than that, probably a black, bee and all those kinds of things, and et cetera. Barack Obama, President of the United States, 44th President of the United States, who served this country without controversy, corruption, allegations of wrongdoing, and et cetera, has been forever besmudged, if you will, by being accused of committing a felony, and yet there is no apology for the man who sits as the 45th President of the United States, Donald Trump. No apology, if you will. No one has offered an apology to the human being and the family of Barack Obama, if you will, nor to his reputation and to his legacy. See, that is how the African-American, the sons and daughters of the African who were brought here in slaves, as slaves and in chains and et cetera, that is how we are viewed. We are still viewed as less than human, if you will. That does not mean that any of us accept that, but that is how we are viewed as less than human, that we can be spoken of and we can be spoken against in any manner that is determined appropriate as a part of white privilege in this country of ours. White privilege is not going to serve us well if a miscalculation is made, either, quote-unquote, in the China Sea and the Sea of Japan, or on the desert plains of a place called Syria and Iraq and anywhere else that becomes touched by miscalculations by men who want to play the game of war, but really don't want to fight it, you know. Will not put on a helmet, and as Jack Nicholson said in A Few Good Men, want to stand post and man the wall. It is not good. It is not healthy when folks play with the lives of hundreds of millions of other human beings, if you will. Well, as we move into the last 20 minutes, we have some local information and news that we want to share because we were taken back. And sometime in the next couple of days, we will see in the major paper here, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a story that says that there was some misinformation provided about a little over a week ago when it was announced that a grant or monies had been awarded to deal with the problem, crime and public safety in the downtown areas of our beloved city. Of course, the hottest area as it pertains to violence and assaults is a place called North Minneapolis, which has the heavy concentration of African Americans and assaults, though there is conflict in all corners of our city in that regard. In fact, this past Saturday at Shiloh Missionary Baptist International, a missionary church, Bishop Howell, one of the finest ecumenical leaders here in our city, there was a mayoral forum, and the specific agenda and declaration was that the candidates were there to talk about specifically North Minneapolis, because oftentimes North Minneapolis is referred to in the past tense as if it didn't exist or if it wasn't important, if you will. And if it is important, it is only important, quote-unquote, to provide economic stimulus, quote-unquote, to white organizations and groups and et cetera. And so at this mayoral forum, you had a state representative, you had an activist, you had a city councilman who is running for council, you had a former member of the deputy of the Minneapolis Housing Authority. You had the mayor, who I still think has done everything that she possibly could to do the right thing. Had a gentleman who was a city worker who, he couldn't stop calling the crowd, which was about over 120, heavily African-American. He couldn't, stop referring to them as them people, you people. You then had a young man who has a couple of convenience stores. He is a young man of color, if you will, seemed to be well prepared, if you will. I thought did a good job. And then you had a gentleman who has been a long time activist, if you will, Captain Jack, He kind of began to make some mistakes talking in terms of police community relations, if you will. My thinking was that, that's right, and you also had the former president of the NAACP, former college professor of law at St. Thomas College, which is in both Minneapolis and St. Paul. She was excellent as it pertains to her oratorical presentation, et cetera. I just thought that she, maybe went beyond the pale with regards to some of her historical identifications. But the voters of the city of Minneapolis will make the ultimate determination in November of this year. But as it pertains to who really seemed to understand and really have the passion of the North community in this particular forum, which was for the North community, was a man by the name of Alfred Flowers. Mr. Flowers is the first person that I identified as an activist, if you will, person who has a radio program here on the Urban Contemporary Station here in Minneapolis, a man who ran 4 years ago. People tend to forget that Mr. Flowers ran 4 years ago, had some rough edges and et cetera, but actually did a pretty good job. We have what's called a rank system here, which is the dumbest system you ever want to see. That, you know, somebody who finishes third, though, winds up getting more votes than the person who is in first place and second place. You know, that's who basically wins. It is a piece of orange work, if you know what I mean. In other words, a very confusing process. I was surprised that 4 years later, that the mothers and fathers of governance here in the city of Minneapolis would continue to use the ranked voting. But, you know, they did. It's, you know, their city, and they are the power brokers. We are basically a very much a Democratic city, if you will, a Democratic Party, in what has become a red state. Hillary Clinton barely won the state of Minnesota. If it had not been for the large number of immigrants, particularly Somalis, particularly folks up on the so-called Iron Range of northern Minnesota who kind of got out and kind of voted, Minnesota would have clearly been a red state. But, of course, the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul are strong, Democratic strongholds, if you will, though they are not as liberal as they would like to lead people to believe. And so a couple of weeks ago, the announcement was made that there was finally a plan to deal with the – and see, we're not honest here. We're really not honest in my beloved Shangri-La, my beloved city, because we don't talk about race based on how we really feel. And there are a lot of people that would prefer that African-Americans, you know, go back to Chicago and Detroit and Gary and Kansas City and Omaha, you know what I'm saying, and disappear, you know, never to come back again. Though they love to see us entertain them. They like, with the exception of when it is determined that black football players are possibly taking advantage sexually of a young white girl, and they, you know, they indict and charge all of them, not the legal system, but the media and others, particularly those closely affiliated with the University of Minnesota, such as its president, athletic director, and chairman of the Board of Regents. And then they have to exonerate five of those young African-Americans that they did no wrong and et cetera. But the damage had been done. They had been castigated, if you will, so portrayed as nothing but wild animals that the damage was done. And then we have other areas where if we're there for entertainment, be it the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Minnesota Twins, if you will, of course, the Minnesota Gopher football, basketball team, if you will, of course, the Minnesota Vikings, if you will. If we are there to entertain, we keep our mouths closed, if you will. We smile, we cheese, and we buck and wing, as we used to say many, many years ago. We are tolerated in this beloved Shangri-La of ours. In fact, what it's called is Minnesota Nights. And so when the announcement was made that a plan was in place, that $250,000 had been set aside, and that an organization that says that it works with young African-Americans to learn and acquire the necessary skills to get all these good-paying jobs, they made that same kind of endorsement and promise on the building of the Viking Stadium, now referred to as U.S. Bank, in which basically no African Americans of significant number were a part of that. What happened is that the Sports Facility Authority, and by the way, it's gone on some changes, both the executive director and the chairwoman were ousted under pressure, if you will, just about a month ago. But in the meanwhile, no one can produce the statistical data which shows how many African-Americans really worked on the stadium. It certainly was not the 32 to 36% that the Commissioner of Human Rights declared for over 4 years, talking in terms of how well things were. I've always taken this position as a historian and as a journalist. If there was as much prosperity as we are being told allegedly exist in the Twin Cities and throughout the state of Minnesota for African Americans, for the sons and daughters of the African, then why is it we have so much violence? Why is it that far too many are dependent upon drug trafficking, quote unquote, to make ends meet, to put food on the table, if you will, to make themselves feel that they have a certain worth? I could never get an answer to that. I started raising this question about 8 months ago. I got tired of hearing folks talk in terms of how well the African American population had been serviced, if you will, and getting a significant employment, if you will. 37% of the workforce of 7,000 were African Americans, and et cetera. That's just a bunch of malarkey, if you will. You also know that we do have young people listening, so we won't use the kind of language that we would like. And so when the $250,000 announcement was made, it indicated that OIC, Summit OIC, as it is called, would be providing all the necessary ingredients. Notice we use this so that folk indicate that we were broad enough in our reflection and description of what the story was. And so on this program, with my associate, Mr. Allen, we began to ask questions about just what would Summit Academy, Mad Dads, if you will, Youth Link, and others, what would they be providing, and et cetera. Well, lo and behold, the major paper here in the city of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, is getting ready to report that under Freedom of Information, they acquired the budget, if you will. I don't think there was ever really a proposal. And lo and behold, one of the things that happened is that Summit OIC did not receive $250,000. They received $55,000. A organization known as the Urban Solutions, if you will, Urban Solutions received $50,000, and that $144,000 went to law enforcement and the hiring of more individuals to serve as what is called ambassadors, people that kind of stand out on the corner and help you, you know, point you to the direction of the many. We have the traditional street first half in our beloved downtown that is the watering hole. And, of course, how the Caucasian drinkers and facilitators are handled is much different than how young African Americans. And so, one of the things that I have said for quite some time as a journalist and, again, as a historian, is that we need to understand that this is a policy of racial cleansing. I mean, people shouldn't get upset because we told folks this during the occasion of the Major League All-Star Game in, what was that, 2014, if you will, that the real purpose was to kind of create quarantine zones and quarantine African Americans out of downtown, if you will, and other certain locations, but primarily downtown, because allegedly we're going through a great rebuilding of downtown. And yet I saw something interesting, because one of the issues that also came up in the last minutes of tonight's program was the problem, and man, I got to tell you, we have a terrible problem with youth and teenage homelessness. In fact, you'd be surprised at how many young African Americans, both in Minneapolis and St. Paul school districts, are homeless. Far too many of them ride the light rail all night long before they try to come to school and matriculate, if you will, and get some form of education. And so in today's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, there was an announcement that an organization known as Youth Link, working with a group that has been building houses for a long time, if you will, as a part of a nonprofit, which really they're not, that a five-story building with 46 units for, get this, homeless youth in our city is going to be built, and it should be ready in about a year and a half. Five-story building, 46 units. Other kinds of amenities are in place to help our young people. As I said before, we have proportionally the largest number homeless youth, and specifically youth of color, and more specifically African-American, and then probably followed by Native American, though the Native American community does a much better job of providing and fighting for housing and decent accommodations and safe accommodations, because you'd be surprised at how many young African-American women and slash mothers, I'm talking about 16, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old young ladies, who are victims of sex trafficking, if you will, and sexual molestation, if you will, or sexual assaults, and et cetera. It is something that it is taboo. We are not to talk about it here in the Twin Cities. We talk about it here on this program, on the Don and Ron program, but it is quite clear that it is a serious problem. And so this $250,000 was to also be used to deal with the problem of homelessness in downtown Minneapolis. Not the neighborhood, if you will. I mean, if you're homeless in the neighborhoods, just kind of crawl up under a bridge, if you will, or find an abandoned house. I'm just surprised that we have not found more people dead, if you will, expired, in some of these abandoned houses that we have boarded up in both North and South Minneapolis. We've really been very lucky. So back in late December, early January, we had a cold spell here. Two elderly African-American men froze to death on the same day, about two blocks apart. We have not heard anything. We have not seen anything. In fact, I was expecting that our congressional fifth district congressional to us as a community and as a people about those two African-American men who froze to death, if you will, who died within two blocks of each other, et cetera. But, you know, folks indicated they were busy doing too many other things, and so we really didn't have time, and so we really haven't gotten around to it. But the Star Tribune will be reporting on the distribution, if you will, of the monies from the $250,000, which actually was found by two council members in the mayor's budget, according to the copyrighted story in the Star Tribune 2 weeks ago. Democrat Lisa Goodman and Councilman Fry, if you will, who is also Councilman Fry is also running for mayor of the city of Minneapolis. And so as we begin to wrap it tonight, hopefully our associate, Mr. Allen, will be returning. But we certainly want to keep our eye on the situation in the Sea of Japan, if you will, in and around the peninsula of Korea, and the military preparedness that's going on. And just hope, my friends, and hope and pray, as individuals who are concerned about other human individuals, that we pray for the fate not only of our nation, but we pray for the fate of this planet that we all reside on, because contrary to all these private rockets and et cetera, if it comes down, if you see that bright light in the sky, there's nowhere that we've got to go. And so God bless you, not only America, but God bless everyone, be there in North Korea or Syria or whatever, because the hand of fate is on our shoulder. I'm Ron Edwards, and I will be back with you next week with my colleague, Mr. Don Allen. Once again, God bless you, and God bless America. Good evening.